Welcome into another edition of NBA Sound System. Gil McGregor here, once again joined by my man, Scott Rafferty. Scott, how you doing this week, man?
Great, man. We have a lot of Summer League basketball to overreact to. It's a great time of the year. How about yourself?
You know, I said this about Summer League basketball, and I think a coach told me this a long time ago. It's never as good as it seems, and it's never as bad as it seems. It's somewhere in the middle. It's hard to kind of gauge where we are, but I'm doing good. It was really cool to see just basketball on pretty much all day once Summer League got underway Friday. We got one weekend of the Vegas Summer League in the books. And for those of you out there, at the time we're recording this on July 10th, Damian Lillard is still a trailblazer for now. So we'll see how that goes. Now, one of the biggest things from the opening weekend of Summer League that we have to start with, Victor Wembanyama, number one overall pick by the San Antonio Spurs. The hype was ridiculous. He didn't even join the team when they played in Sacramento, but he did join them in Las Vegas, and the hype was greater than pretty much anything I had ever seen. Our Carlin Gay and Steph Noah were out there and got a chance to really see the hype firsthand. First game was a little rough. He had 9 points. He was 2 for 13 from the field, but he did have 8 boards, 5 blocks, and 2 assists. Second game was as advertised, 27 points, 9 of 14 from the field, and he hit 2 threes as well and blocked 3 shots, pulled down 12 boards. So I ask you, Scott, your first impression of Victor Wembanyama in his first 2 games as an NBA player. What are you thinking?
He's a bust, Gil. He's an absolute bust. No, it's the first game against the Hornets, it was rough from a scoring aspect, mm-hmm. but I also think he did a lot of still really impressive stuff in that game. Like the couple grab and goes that he had, pushing it, finding the open man. I mean, he probably should have had, at least 5 or 6 assists in that game. Blocks, I mean, 5 blocks. He's just a monster defensively already, and he's just so nimble. Like even little things, like the way he gets around screens sometimes, you just don't see that from guys who are 7 foot. I don't know, 7 foot 3, 7 foot 4, 7 foot whatever he is. But yeah, and then that second game, you know, he looked more comfortable. He looked more aggressive. He got to the free throw line a ton. He had that little stretch in that second quarter where it felt like, you know, things were falling in place for him. So the thing for me is that I feel this is just going to sound ridiculous because he's one of the most high prospects of all time. I feel very comfortable that he's going to be a very good NBA player because I feel like the stuff that he does well just gives him such a high floor. Like defensively, I think he's just going to be so impactful really from day one. And yes, look, he's probably going to struggle. People are going to push him around. He's going to grow into his body more. But I just think his shot blocking and his ability to defend the perimeter that size is just incredible. And then offensively, like, we do this all the time with Trae Young, for example, right? Where it's like, oh, well, why doesn't he just run around like Steph Curry? Like that stuff takes buy-in and it's really difficult. And that applies somewhat to Wembanyama. And like, I think he has a high floor because of the like the big men things he can do where it's like screen, roll. I mean, you saw in that second game, I think it was, where it's just like he gets a stop and then he takes off down the other end of the court, seals someone who's not a center, and like that's an easy bucket for him every single time because he's so big. Like there's just little things like that, like an alley-oop threat. He cuts well. All those little things, I feel like he just gives him such a high floor offensively. And then if you can add to that the shooting that we've seen in spurts, the ball handling, the ability to create his own shot, I mean, yeah, he's going to be ridiculous if he all adds that.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing about seeing a guy that's, again, 7'3 plus, we'll call it, it's not a normal thing to see because there are not that many guys that are that big. So I noticed in that first game, and it's actually something that Kyle Irving, who's done so much work, you know, on these draft prospects leading up to the draft and after the draft, he noted, I think it was even on Twitter against the Hornets game, was that Wemby was really kind of playing like a three. You know, he was guarding Brandon Miller on the defensive end. He wasn't really doing too much to go inside. I don't know if it was strategic for him to, you know, not, you know, get to do too much banging in there and really risk anything that doesn't need to be risked during Summer League. But I think I asked that question or I make that observation to say, like, I wonder, you know, if that's just a Summer League thing, or do you think that that is going to be part of the Spurs plan to kind of ease him in? Because you mentioned, you know, he's really tall, but he's also very slender, and he's going to face some grown men this upcoming season that are really strong and have the opportunity to kind of punish him physically right now. And I know that, you know, Carlin and seeing the game mentioned that, you know, that speed seemed to have an impact on him, because the speed of the NBA game, even at the summer league, is different, you know, than what he was playing at in France. And the speed of an actual NBA game is going to be different as well. So when you look at that, do you think that there are measures that probably should be taken to maximize his capability to start? Because, you know, we know he's going to be a good player at the very least, but has the opportunity to be a star slash superstar in the league. Do you think that's a key part of that, I guess, progression?
I think that's part of why he wasn't that great in that first game, is that he kind of did just drift towards the perimeter a little bit too much. And mm-hmm. then, like you said, when he tried to take guys off the dribble, like, they're going to be more physical with him. He can't mm-hmm. quite get by them. I think it's also important to remember, like, he played in the best league in France. And right. as a 19-year-old, won MVP, Defensive Player of the Year, led the league in scoring, blocks, best young player. His team went to the finals. Like, he's played against grown men all of mm-hmm. last year, and even the season before that, right? So, yes, the NBA game is different, but I think it's super encouraging, too, that he did look a little bit out of depth in that first game. And then that second game, it's like, okay, no. Here's the guy everyone's been talking about, putting together, what was it, 27, 12, and 3 in 27 minutes. Was absolutely dominant. So I do think it's, you know, one of the first things that jumped out to me when the Spurs released their summer league roster, one was to see what they officially listed him as, which was 7'3", but two, also the position they listed him at as, and they put him as a forward, right? And you would never expect right. someone 7'3". I mean, I know Kristaps Porzingis is around that yeah. same height. He plays right. center and forward sometimes, depending on what's needed, and he will in Boston. But I don't know. I thought that was very interesting, because that's one of the big things going into his rookie season, that I want to see what the Spurs do with him. Like, do you pair him with a more traditional center? Like, I really like the idea of Jakob Poeltl going back there, because, like, that's kind of the perfect big man I feel like you'd want to pair with him. But I also think that just speaks to really how ridiculous Wemby's potential is, right? Where it's like, in 5 years' time, you could probably, he's going to play center some games and some quarters, and then he's going to slide to power forward, and hey, maybe he's playing small forward too. Like, who knows? That's just what makes him such a unique prospect, is he does have all these skills to just wear so many different hats.
That's something that, you know, I want to circle back. One, you mentioned them striking out on the reunion with Jakob Poeltl and really who they can put in that lineup with him. And I think that's one thing that's important to note about Summer League, when you mentioned all those potential assists that he could have had. Just as the competition is going to be better when the regular season rolls around, so will the players that he's playing next to. And I know some of the guys he's playing next to in the summer, he'll be playing next to this upcoming season, you know, like Malachi Branham and you know, Julian Champagny is really making a name for himself this summer. But I'm interested to see, you know, how Wemby is going to play when he's playing next to Jeremy Sochan and when he's playing, you know, next to Trey Jones and some of those guys who are a notch better. Keldon Johnson, let me not forget Keldon Johnson, who has been the guy in San Antonio in years past. And I say that to say, just really thinking of and reflecting over what we saw from Wembanyama in the first weekend. There's been talks on him just playing one or two games. He's already played two games. Who knows what's going to happen? But I guess I pose a question to you. If that Trailblazers game in which he scored 27 points was the second and final game that he will play out in Las Vegas, have you seen enough from him to just be like, all right, okay, cool, he's ready for what the regular season has in store? Do you think there was something else that maybe he should show a little more of, or he could show a little more of ahead of the regular season?
I don't think he really has anything else to show. Look, his season ended, what, like a month ago? He played just before, basically up until the draft almost, and then he's had a very little break. It's easy to forget these little things to us, obviously big thing to him. This guy's been playing in France. He's from France. He just moved to the States. He's gone from New York to San Antonio, now to Las Vegas. There was a Britney Spears incident. He's been in the media nonstop. Like, this has been a crazy, crazy month for him. So I don't think he has anything else left to prove. I will say, I'm curious. I mean, everyone's been curious about what he's going to look like his rookie season, but I know there were some scouts who were basically like, he could be an all-star from day one, right? Like, he's going to walk in the league and he's going to be one of the top, I don't know, 20, 30 players. He could absolutely be that. But I do, that first game against the Hornets makes me think, and even one of my favorite exercises every year going into the draft is I watch, like, I pick the best, the worst, and a middle of the road game for a prospect to get a better sense of, like, you know, who they are, what their potential is, what their strengths and weaknesses are. And the big thing that jumped out to me was, like, and you kind of saw it in that second game, where it's like there are stretches when Wemby just puts it all together and he looks absolutely incredible. But there's also stretches where, like, he does float around a little bit offensively. And then there's the stuff with, like, you know, him being bumped from his spots when he puts the ball on the floor and everything like that. Mm-hmm. So again, like, I think he's going to be really good defensively from day one. I do wonder if there's going to be a bit more of a learning curve offensively than a lot of people are expecting. But either way, I mean, to me, that first game, there were a lot of positives to take from it. And that second game was so dominant that I don't know if he has anything else to prove, really.
Yeah, I think the big thing, based on what you just said, is patience. People are probably expecting him, like you said, as big as being an all-star caliber player from day one, which he could very well be, but I think it's a reminder he's 19 years old. He won't be 20 until January. So patience is going to be important. He's probably going to live up to a lot of the things that are being expected of him, but if it doesn't happen on day one or in the first month of the season, it doesn't mean it's not going to happen. It just means let's be patient with this young guy who was drafted number one for a reason, and the Spurs are going to build the right way around him. That being said, he's not the only big name that's playing. I know he played against the Hornets and Brandon Miller, number two overall pick, who things have been a little rough for in the California Classic and in Las Vegas. But around the league, Summer League, your impressions, your big takeaways, has it been somebody who stood out to you more than others? And is there maybe an overreaction that's come from that?
I try not to overreact too much to Summer League. I will say some of the Brandon Miller stuff has been concerning to me. He's mm-hmm. another guy I did like the best, worst in the middle of the road mm-hmm. game. And I think for him, look, I don't think Summer League is the best situation for him, right? I think when you see him next to LaMelo Ball, a guy who is going to find the open man more times than not, is a really good playmaker, is going to push the pace in transition, find him for threes, find him for dunks and layups. I think that's going to make a big, big difference to his game. But there's stuff mm-hmm. like the self-creation. When I was watching those games, like, he has moments, right, where it's like he'll break someone down, throw an incredible pass, or he'll finish strong at the basket. But the numbers weren't great finishing around the rim in the half court, especially. And he doesn't have like a ton of pop. And then when you combine right. that with kind of a loose handle sometimes, like he really does struggle, especially against guys like his size and bigger. So there's just, again, I don't want to overreact too much. I don't think this is the best situation for him. But right. to kind of see some of the concerns I had magnified even more is a little concerning. But beyond that, I mean, like, Scoot Henderson looked great in that game before he got injured. That's super unfortunate. Hopefully we see him again in Summer League, but hopefully, you know, he's healthy his rookie season and beyond that. The Thompson twins were really fun in what we've seen from them. I asked Kyle this in our meeting today. Why should I not love Jairus Walker? Because, look, we're talking about the number eight pick in the draft. He's one of the best prospects mm-hmm. in his class, right? But I also feel like everyone was talking about Wemby, Miller, Scoot, the Thompson twins, maybe a little Anthony Black, and then that was kind of it, I feel like, on like the general scope. But for right. me, Jairus Walker is a guy I feel like I'm just going to fall in love with. Like, big body, defensively, protect the rim, can defend multiple positions, hit the three. I know some of the concerns with him is, like, can he create his own shot? And he got a little bit mid-range dependent. But I also think, you know, pairing him next to like a Miles Turner and Tyrese Halliburton in Indiana, I just think he's going to look fantastic there. And I'm really excited to watch him.
Yeah, love his motor. He had one of the better moments of the opening weekend when he shot his second free throw. Nobody realized it was a second free throw. He got his own rebound, just dunked it back easily. Had a crazy block. The Pacers are doing something. You know, you talk about him and, you know, kind of the guys they're building to put around Tyrese Halliburton, brought in Obi Toppin via trade as well. So I think Jairus Walker and what the Pacers are doing, also Bruce Brown, they got in free agency. The Pacers are going to be a pretty fun team that a lot of people are expecting a lot from. They were pretty good last year right before Tyrese Halliburton had that injury. I want to say, like, you know, halfway through the season or whatever, they kind of lingered in the top 5-6 in the Eastern Conference way longer than people expected them to be. So put in Jairus Walker in the mix, who, by the way, perfect example of making me feel old. Now, I went to the Junior NBA World Championships 5 years ago, and Jairus Walker was a young player at the Junior NBA World Championships, and now we're covering him, talking about him in the big NBA. So that just goes to show you how time flies with that. A couple names I have written down just from, you know, really standing out to me, Anthony Black down in Orlando. You know, the Magic seem to have a bunch of guards on their roster because they're just trying to find the guy. They've had so many draft picks from the Vooch trade. They've picked up young guys. They kind of have taken on the role that other teams have done as well. They're taking flyers on guys who other teams have maybe written off and seeing if it sticks or not. And you know, they've tried Jalen Suggs. Who knows if that's, you know, not the answer anymore. Markelle Fultz and also have Cole Anthony on the roster. But Anthony Black, seems like that's going to be the guy who fits the timeline of the other young guys on their team. He's got size. We talked about him being like a little more athletic version of Josh Giddey, which is pretty scary to think about. And he's looked really good when he was out there. And two other guys I wrote down, Keontae George from the rookie class, and also Jabari Smith Jr., who a little too good to be playing, like slightly too good to be playing summer league, but not too good to where he probably like getting the extra reps are important for him. And he really has shown. I think he scored 29 points from the second to the fourth quarter in his first game after a pretty slow start to the first game. Then he just really took over at 38 points. That's the highest total as we record right now from summer league. So Jabari Smith Jr. I think is putting it together and is primed for a big year. And the Rockets are another team. They'll be fun to watch. I don't know what it's going to mean for them, but you know, we've mentioned two of their guys already, and we haven't talked about you know, Cam Whitmore. So they got something going down in Houston as well. So those are some guys that stood out to me.
Yeah, we talked about the Rockets for a while this morning, and they're just a really interesting team. Like last two seasons, you know, pretty easy wins to come against, mm-hmm. right? Like they've just been a really young, disorganized team. I feel like this season that they're going to be. Every night should be tough against them, right? Like Fred VanVleet, Dylan Brooks are going to bring it. And they just have so many young guys who really at this point, based on the moves that they've made, like minutes aren't just going to be given to them. Like they're going to have right. to compete for it. And I think that's really, really good for some of those guys in the development. And it's great for like a Jabari Smith, right? Who's showing up in summer league, putting together these big games, showing that he deserves it. And I expect that to kind of continue with him. But yeah, I mean, they've got a fun Jalen Green. I hope he kind of takes right. a leap this season. Şengün, some of the stuff we've seen from him, super, super fun. So this is hopefully, I mean, that's the idea, right? By hiring Ime Udoka, making the free agent moves that they made, they wanted to get some adults in the room and kind of set a culture moving forward for this young team. So, but yeah, I mean, that's huge for them. If Jabari Smith is going to take that leap, cause you know, it's funny how he was, it seemed like all indications, the number one pick in last year's draft, right? And then it was right, basically right. like 30 minutes beforehand, that just seemed to flip, and it's Paolo Banchero, and it's easy to forget right. that Jabari Smith was that number one for so long. So,
yeah, the Rockets are fascinating to me. Ime Udoka being the head coach now, and then you mentioned Adelson, and they signed Fred VanVleet, brought in Dylan Brooks, and also Jeff Green. An interesting blend of guys who will be strong voices in the locker room along with a no-nonsense head coach in Ime Udoka who won't be afraid to tell those guys on that team to straighten up. And again, like you said, like playing time is no longer a promise for those guys. So it'll be interesting to see what they'll continue to do and how they continue to build this team and if they can make a leap. I know Fred VanVleet said the goal is to get them to the playoffs. They may be a year or two away from that, but these guys are kind of in the primes of their career and they have guys who have won before in the past. The Rockets did a lot in free agency and there's still some other guys out there in free agency. So we'll take a quick break and talk about this, I guess, second phase of free agency that we're in right now with a couple of restricted free agents that are starting to find their landing spots. And as the market dries up, what teams can continue to do to improve their roster. So we'll talk about that right after a quick break. So we're kind of at, I guess, the weird part of free agency, I guess, so to speak. You know, the first 24 hours, 48 hours, you see a bunch of big deals get signed, signing trades happen, big names move, or guys just stay where they are. But now as the market kind of dries up, especially with the new CBA in place, a couple of the restricted free agents are starting to find their landing spots, or they're starting to try to figure out where they're landing. This past week, Grant Williams in a sign and trade, which has yet to be finalized, by the way. So there could be more teams that get involved, but Grant Williams is going from the Celtics to the Dallas Mavericks. The Mavericks are really seem to be focusing on, and committing on building their team defensively around Kyrie Irving and Luka Doncic, but still out there. PJ Washington is still out there, and Ayo Dosunmu is another guy among some other big names, and also the Matisse Thybulle deal signed an offer sheet with the Mavericks, but was matched by the Trailblazers. When you look at the state of where we are right now with restricted free agency, some of the names that are still out there, what do you think about, first of all, Grant landing in Dallas? What does he bring to them, and what do the Celtics lose? But also, who else do you have your eye on of guys who haven't found a home yet?
I really like the pickup for the Mavericks in Grant Williams. I mentioned him as the number one free agent that I'm kind of keeping my eye on, or the one I thought was most interesting. I really love his fit there. I mean, he kind of fits in with every team, right? Like a super strong power forward who versatile versatile on the defensive end, can defend really every single position. And then offensively, yes, he's limited, but he offers stretch four, which you need next to a Luka Doncic and a Kyrie Irving. So I love that pickup for them. I think it's a pretty big loss for the Celtics, to be honest. I know this year was weird for him. He was in and out of the lineup. Maybe just didn't gel with the coaching staff, right? But I just think he's someone that can kind of fit anywhere. And especially on this Celtics team where they're relying a lot on Al Horford, who's getting up there in miles and age. It's easy to forget he's what, in his mid to late 30s at this point. And then Robert Williams, who unfortunately just gets injured, it feels like, every single season. And then now Paul Zingas, who isn't exactly, you know, a guy who's always healthy either. So they're relying a lot on those three big men. And, you know, Jason Tatum can slide down a position. So can Jaylen Brown. But I just think, you know, a guy who's a workhorse, plays every single game, basically, that can end up being a pretty big loss for them. But I really like that pickup for the Mavs. I thought it was interesting that they offered Matisse Thybulle, that offer sheet that the Trailblazers matched. They, as you said, clearly want to try and surround Luka and Kyrie with more defenders, because offensively, the numbers just said, like, they're incredible. After they got Kyrie last year, the defense was the big issue. But I guess I am interested in seeing where Christian Wood lands, because he's probably the best player still available at this point. And yes, he leaves a lot to be desired defensively. Offensively, sometimes it can feel like he's a little bit empty calories. He's still super, super talented. And he's a guy who I feel like, you know, is going to land in the right situation one day. And we're going to be like, how did he end up here? I wonder if that's going to happen this time. But yeah, he's probably, I would say, the best player still available. Him or PJ Washington, I feel like.
Yeah, I was going to mention that, you know, one thing on Grant before, you know, the guys were still out there. I've seen the sentiment a lot, you know, on Celtics Twitter or from Celtics beat writers or whatever, that, you know, obviously losing Marcus Smart was a massive loss in itself for, you know, all Boston fans and the locker room or whatever. But, you know, to a very different extent, Grant kind of brought a similar type of fight to that locker room, you know, to that team. I know people got on him a lot for going, you know, head to head and really, you know, not backing down from Jimmy Butler. And, you know, Jimmy Butler definitely got the last laugh and then some, but no, not a lot of guys would do that and be willing to, you know, not embarrass themselves, but be willing to put up that fight and be on the receiving end of what it was, because you kind of have to challenge guys, right? You're not going to back down from them. And he even said as much after that game. So I wonder, you know, where that comes from now. And I know I mentioned it before when we talked about, you know, not necessarily addition by subtraction, but maybe, you know, some of the guys who they've wanted to step up and be more vocal can do that now that they're not looking over their shoulders. Maybe we'll see that from this team moving forward, but that's something to keep an eye on, you know, not necessarily when it comes to the regular season, but in the playoffs, who's going to be the guy to step up and kind of not be afraid, you know, to kind of, you know, put themselves on the line the way that Grant Williams does. PJ Washington, you know, the latest reporting I'm seeing on him is that he could end up signing a qualifying offer with the Hornets and just, you know, play it out for a year and really try to earn a bigger payday next offseason. Now, we talked a little bit about Brandon Miller. As an unrestricted
free agent is what that is.
Yeah, and be an unrestricted free agent next year.
He could just leave for nothing.
Right. So that'd be interesting to see if that's what he ends up doing. The Hornets are in a very interesting spot. You know, they had the two play-in losses back-to-back years. LaMelo Ball had a lot of injury issues last year, so they took a major step back. But, you know, I think keeping PJ Washington, I think the Hornets are in a spot where they have to keep all the talent that they can. And then, you know, they still have guys like Gordon Hayward and Terry Rozier, who, if the guys that they do bring back end up being better than they expect to be or live up and continue to improve, then you can trade those veterans to teams who are looking to improve, maybe at the trade deadline or for the playoff push next season. I feel like that's their best case scenario. Ayo Dosunmu was a guy who I highlighted just because I've seen him linked to the Raptors. I know the Raptors have been interested in him. It feels like if he was going back to the Bulls, they would have brought him back by now. Maybe the Bulls are just waiting to see what the market is like. They've already re-signed Kobe White. And we know Lonzo Ball is not going to play this upcoming season. So they also lost Patrick Beverley. So it kind of, maybe the Bulls are just waiting to match. But I know that the Raptors have expressed interest. So I don't know if that will happen or how that will go. But he's somebody to keep an eye on if he ends up changing, I guess, locations as far as that goes. I know I mentioned this in that one thing. We didn't even actually talk about this beforehand, but I wanted your thoughts because something else that happened this past week. We learned a little more about the NBA's midseason tournament. There are six groups of five teams. Then there will be the top eight teams from those will compete for the NBA Cup midseason championship, which will be played early December in Las Vegas. So I know you talked about it before. I think we had similar thoughts in the past. We kind of doubted the play-in tournament has been a success. I know you kind of said you're in that mindset now, or how are you feeling about that after we learned a little more about how it's going to work?
Yeah, that's kind of just the mindset I have. Like, this is just kind of trust in Adam Silver and his thought process here for me, honestly. Like, I think the play-in tournament was super weird and hard to kind of wrap your head around when it was first introduced. Mm-hmm. And now it's really fun, right? It's opened up the opportunity for 10 teams to potentially make playoffs. You don't have that time of the year where it feels like a bunch of teams just mail it in because they know they've got nothing to play for. So I think that's been a huge benefit. And then those games, like the one-and-done games, are super fun, right? Because for a lot of these teams, like you see the Thunder this year, who are going all in to try and get that spot. A Timberwolves team, the Lakers, like how much that single game means to them. So similarly, like I'm still trying to wrap my head around the in-season tournament. But I think, you know, ultimately, I just have trust that it's probably going to work out. And once it happens for the first time, we'll look back and be like, why did we ever doubt this? This was really cool. Because, it does work in soccer, right? This is the model that they're kind of basing on. So I am fascinated to see. Obviously, this is going to require a buy-in from the players, right? Because if they don't take it super seriously, then that's going to impact the quality of it and everything like that. But it's going to be so funny if we do get like a Raptors against Spurs final or something like that. You know what I mean? So it does add something new to the season. I'm optimistic. I'll say that.
I will say the cool thing about it is we get it out of the way, right? It starts November 3rd. It ends December 9th. It's not dragging out. It's not like a subplot, like late into the year. It's kind of something that we can get. Honestly, it adds an element of intrigue to the season when a lot of people who aren't necessarily tuned in or dialed into to the NBA season, maybe they have another reason to kind of tune in. And the way I've kind of looked at it is that it's just really granting us with whoever makes it to the championship. And maybe it is two up and coming teams like you mentioned before. But we could get, you know, an extra primetime matchup between two elite teams playing for the NBA Cup and looking at the prize money. It seems like they have a little bit of incentive. Championship team gets $500,000 per player and the runner up gets $200,000 per player. And the semifinals, $100,000. Not bad at all.
Yeah, I'd take that.
Not bad
I'd
at all. Yeah, me too. I would sign a 10-day. I would sign an exclusive tournament contract. And I will do all I could to help whatever team it is to play. So ultimately, like I said, if we can get one extra primetime game in it, I would assume it'd be the only game on TV that day. Everybody be tuned into it. So whatever it is, if we're on Threads or Twitter, we'll get NBA Threads and NBA Twitter coming behind and watching all of that as a family. Speaking of tournaments, before that, the FIBA Basketball World Cup is right around the corner. It gets underway on August 25th. And last week, we've had a lot of reporting about it from all over the place, but Team USA just came out and announced that the roster has been finalized. I'll run through it real quick. I know we've talked about it before. A younger generation of team, in alphabetical order, Paolo Banchero, Mikal Bridges, Jalen Brunson, Anthony Edwards, Tyrese Halliburton, Josh Hart, Brandon Ingram, Jaren Jackson Jr., Cam Johnson, Walker Kessler, Bobby Portis, and Austin Reeves. Scott, your thoughts on the 12-man unit that will be led by Steve Kerr?
Yeah, fascinating team. I know you've crunched some of the numbers more, but there's, what, three All-Star selections on this team?
I think so. I think it's three or four.
I think it's Tyrese Halliburton, Anthony Edwards, Jaren Jackson Jr. too. So four.
Yep.
Yeah, so I mean, this is a super young team. These guys haven't really been, what, on this stage before. Was it the last FIBA World Cup? There was like Jason Tatum, Damian Lillard. You know, usually there's like a top 10, 20 player in the league on one of these rosters, a younger player, and you don't really have that here. I mean, who? Anthony Edwards is probably their best player.
I would think so, right?
I don't remember where he landed last time we did our list, but I mean, he's kind of in that top 30 range. But in saying that, like a bunch of young guys, I feel like, you know, they're all going to get up for it. They're going to have something to prove. I like the versatility of this roster. Like they have a couple of good shooters. Like Cam Johnson obviously jumps out here. You got Jalen Brunson, who's coming off an All-Star caliber season. You got some big wings like Paolo Banchero, Mikal Bridges, Anthony Edwards, Brandon Ingram. Like those are just big guys, long arms, can do a bunch of different things. And I also think the front court is just fascinating with Jaren Jackson Jr., Walker Kessler, who's coming off a fantastic rookie season, and then Bobby Portis. Like, they're not the biggest names necessarily, but you can do a lot with those three guys. Like, you can play big. Jaren Jackson Jr. has played next to Steven Adams. Like, he knows how to play next to a more traditional center. Mm-hmm. He can also play center, and what he brings defensively, rim protection, can switch. And then Bobby Portis is another guy who he plays next to Giannis, and he's basically a center on offense when he shares the court with him. So I am fascinated. Austin Reeves, too, after the breakout season, I feel like this is going to be another good, interesting stage for him. So the tough thing is, like, they're going to play against teams who have been together for a really long time, right? Like, you look at Slovenia, all these other, like, international teams, Spain, they won the last one, right? I know some of these rosters will look a little bit different, but that's kind of who they're competing against. So will they have time to kind of put it all together, especially with these guys being as young as they are? But, yeah, I'm interested.
Yeah, Team USA in the same group with New Zealand, Greece, and Jordan to start things off in the top two teams from that group. Move on to the next group stage. I think the thing that I'm curious about, and I'll ask you, if you had to say it right now, need a bucket late game, are you putting it in Anthony Edwards' hands, Brandon Ingram, is it Paolo Banchero? Do you think it depends on the night?
It's not Jalen Brunson?
There you go. Is it Jalen Brunson's hands?
I know, like, a lot of people would name three or four players before him. I feel like I probably trust him more than anyone, not only to, like, get a shot himself, but set it up for someone else. And saying that, it's probably, like, an Anthony Edwards, I would think. But I don't know. Jalen Brunson is the one I feel like I trust the most.
That's fair. And I think the cool thing about that and saying that, and some of the names we talked about, like you mentioned, like a Josh Hart, who will be a really good FIBA player, and even Walker Kessler, like, these are guys who I think we've learned in the past, and we've seen Team USA come up short when they just sent the best stars and it didn't necessarily make a cohesive team. So I think that they were very particular in putting this team together and trying to kind of have a team that can mesh, because they don't have that much time. They have about 3 weeks to figure it out, and then they're straight to competing. They start their training camp on August 3rd, and then the tournament starts on August 25th. So we'll see how that plays out. I mentioned Greece being in their group. Giannis Antetokounmpo last week had a minor cleanup procedure on his left knee. Scott, are you concerned at all about that? Do you think it's just as minor as they say it is?
It's impossible to know, right? I mean, he's had knee issues in both knees for a while now, it feels like. I know this season he dealt with, I think it was left knee soreness, and then he hurt his knee and right knee in a game and left. And then I think it was his left knee, right, in the 2021 playoffs where, I still don't know how he came back from that based on how bad it looked. So I know that it's the same knee that he's getting surgery on now. Hopefully it is something small just to clean up. You know, we want to see Giannis is one of those guys, like the way that he plays, right, is so dependent on kind of his athleticism, moving left to right, Euro steps, everything like that. And obviously knee is super important for those things. So hopefully it is something minor. It kind of seems like he's probably not going to play in this tournament, right, or he's questionable, which based on what's just happened probably makes sense. But, I mean, that would be the benefit of the Team USA, right, if Giannis doesn't play. Not that – I think we've learned over the, like, recently, none of these games are easy anymore. Like, the world has really caught up to the point where, like, they're going to bring it every night and it's going to be competitive because everyone wants to beat Team USA, right? But, you know, not having to go against Giannis. As much fun as it would be to see this team try and slow him down and throw guys at him, that would obviously be a big help for them.
Yeah, I was going to say, Bucks new head coach Adrian Griffin said he'll be ready for training camp. And when he said he'll be ready for training camp, I did a double take. I was like, well, that probably means he's not playing for FIBA. But, you know, I think we've talked about it in the past and we've seen it. Guys have a different level of pride and willingness to, you know, play and wear their country's colors and play in the World Cup. So we'll see if he ends up playing.
You can tell he absolutely loves it.
I mean, absolutely.
Yeah, him. I mean, Luka and and Jokic, those guys, I feel like any opportunity they can, they're going to play for their country.
Yeah. So we'll see. One last note, speaking of new head coaches, I don't even think we talked about this in the past weeks. Nick Nurse, it seemed like it was a mutual decision between him and Canada Basketball and the 76ers, stepped down, and Jordy Fernandez, Kings associate head coach, stepped up, and he is Canada Basketball's head coach that will be leading them at the FIBA World Cup. Don't know too much about the roster just yet, except Kelly Olynyk has confirmed that he will be at training camp when they get going underway. Jordy Fernandez used to work with the Nuggets, so he and Jamal Murray are very familiar with one another. Scott, if you could just we have no idea, but do you think there's anybody that Canada needs to have on that roster to be able to compete and hopefully medal this year? Is it Jamal Murray? Is it Lou Dort? You know, is it Shaden Sharp, RJ Barrett? Who do you think? Oh, Shea, obviously.
Yep.
What are you expecting or what are you thinking?
It's tough, man. I feel like we've been talking for years about how good Team Canada could be. Just based on how many good young players they have in the league right now. Ultimately, I still feel like they're going to need at least one of Jamal Murray and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander to win a tournament like this or medal. Ideally, you'd have both of them, but I don't know. Like, Jamal Murray is, what, a couple years removed from tearing his ACL. He just went on a really long season, won the championship. Yeah. Like, it would make sense if he kind of wants to chill out this offseason, make sure that he's ready for game one for the Nuggets. So like I wouldn't be surprised there. And then was it last year with Shea where he played a game or two and then set out the rest of the way?
Yeah, that was it. Yeah.
I mean, he's coming off a huge season as well. And I think not that we expect the Thunder to compete for a championship this season, but we're expecting them to take, you know, go up another level after they surprised right. everyone with Chet back. Can they make the playoffs? So it's going to be another big season for them. So unfortunately, I wouldn't be surprised based on that if neither of them showed up. But, you know, Murray in particular, that connection he has with Fernandez, I think that's really smart to point out. So it just is unfortunate because it would be nice to see kind of Canada put their best 12 out there right. and see what they could do, because I think they really probably could compete with anyone.
Yeah, and the one thing I will say, if it's not this year, and I know that, you know, it didn't turn out the way they wanted it to in 2021, but again, they didn't have everybody there. But if they don't do well at the World Cup and they need to use next year to qualify for the Olympics in Paris, they'll have an opportunity to do the Olympic qualifiers if they aren't able to put their best foot forward this year. Maybe another year, they'll be able to do it. And some of the younger guys, like a Shaedon Sharpe, maybe Benedict Mathurin, will be a little more ready to do that. So we will see how that goes. Plenty of more FIBA World Cup talk coming to you on NBA Sound System. Like I mentioned, that gets underway on August 25th. So in the lead up towards that, we'll have more on that and obviously more takeaways from Summer League as that wraps up as well. Thanks again for tuning in to this week's NBA Sound System. Please don't forget to subscribe and rate wherever you get your podcasts and keep these coming to you every week. For Scott Rafferty, I am Gil McGregor. We will catch you on NBA Sound System next week. We'll